One.
Welcome everybody to the Chinchilla Picking Podcast. It is Cinco de Mayo, May the 5th, 2024, at 4:20 in the afternoon, or as we used to call it in San Diego, mandatory Marley time. As always, we hope we're entertaining, educational, and uplifting, because we want everyone to make money. My name is David Underwood, and I'm joined by the one and only Baron of Bonds, Brandon Beaver. Brandon, how are you?
I'm doing great. And look, the Mavericks just won their series against the Clippers. Congratulations to Mark Cuban. Fine, you know, last year they brought in Kyrie Irving, and he wasn't the answer. He was really good, but he wasn't the answer. They needed defense, they needed rebounding. They've made some changes to the team this year. Now they have defense. They've got rebounding. They can close out games. That's their specialty. Last year, they'd be going into the fourth quarter with a lead, and they'd lose the lead. Now they keep it. Now they keep it, and they win. And just happy to see Mark Cuban and the Dallas Mavericks, at least one team in Dallas, be a championship contender. At least one.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I mean, the Cowboys are every year to start the year, and then, you know, you get to the end of the year. So,
yeah. Yeah. You know what though, I say about myself all the time, a lot about me has changed in the past 20 years. A lot has, but the good side is still there. The side that kids can really look up to, the Dallas Cowboy fan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The kids. Okay. Anyways, moving on from that. Yes, I enjoyed my Star Wars day yesterday because I'm a big Star Wars fan. I am that geek, and that's fine with that. And then today is Cinco de Mayo, so that's also a fun time as well. A lot of people celebrate. A lot of Americans celebrate by having tacos and having margaritas, but they don't even understand the. A lot of them don't understand the real behind of Cinco de Mayo. A lot of things happened in May, a lot of good things to look at, but there's also been a lot of stock news, a lot of company news, a lot of new interest in different areas, and that's what we do here on the show. We bring it to you guys. So rules. Brandon and I get together 5 to 10 minutes before the show, and we tell each other what you're going to talk about. We save the back and forth, the bicker, and the banter right here for you so that you can be entertained as best as possible while we cover interesting stock and financial topics. We try to stop and explain definitions, why we look at certain things, why we don't look at certain things, so that our listeners can be uplifted and educated while we're cracking jokes on each other and about the Dallas Cowboys. That way we make it fun at the same time. So, yeah, today, Brandon, I already knew what you were going to talk about. I knew what your topics were going to be just because this is every year this time, this is what you cover. And so I did not do any research into it. I briefly read, like I said, I briefly read through some top line numbers that came out in the news wires, and that was it. So I'm going to let you lead it off like always and just respond with from your comments.
Okay. So real quick, you know, I've been recommending Argentina's ETF, the ARGT, that fund. President Javier Milei is maybe how you pronounce his name. I don't know. But anyways, he was just recently in Texas at one of the gigafactories for Texas, or for Tesla. And him and Elon have had this like bromance going on now that I was unaware of until yesterday and today. And it was just funny because I was watching the speech that Elon had retweeted on X about Javier talking about how freedom is so important. And he was, you know, kind of ranting against socialism and stuff, and Elon retweeted it with a comment, "So hot." So hot.
Nice.
But speaking of the bromance here in Tesla this weekend did add a long-range rear wheel drive Model Y to its website. So this is going to get 320 miles per charge. Compared to the other Model Y, which was about 260 miles per charge, the previous model started out at $43,000. The new one starts out at $45,000. So it's not too much of a premium on the price there to get, you know, 60 more miles per charge on it. That's pretty long for an electric vehicle, to be honest with you. But there wasn't a long range option for this Model Y until now. The standard Model Y no longer listed for configuration on the website. And then the all-wheel dual motor Model Y options and pricing are unchanged, though, for that. There is a long-range all-wheel drive model that gets about 310 miles at about $48,000, and a performance model that gets about 280 miles per charge, starting out about $51,000. Go ahead, Dave.
So I'm confused. You started off this about Argentina. I thought you were going to talk about the economy there and how the some of their index funds have been on the rise lately, and you had called that correctly. And now we're talking about Tesla Model Ys.
Well, I'm talking, so it went into Tesla because Tesla and Elon have that bromance. But yes, there were some pretty good positive earnings on Friday from major Argentinian companies that that beat expectations. Javier Milei, he's balanced the budget in Argentina much at a much faster rate than what was earlier predicted. Still got a lot of challenges ahead there, but you know what he said as far as heading towards a more free economy and more free country, there is no plan B. So there's not going to be any compromise from this guy whatsoever. Look him up. I want his face on a t-shirt. He looks like an action star. He does. This guy just looks like awesome. Like you would, I don't know. But anyways, good news on the front. Yes, I said to buy it. Yes, it was up 4% on Friday. Yeah, so I guess
what was that ticker you again? Just that, huh? It didn't come across clearly. What was that ticker?
ARGT. That's the ETF that I was recommending.
ARGT. All right.
Yeah, I still recommend it. I think it's a good long-term buy. I do think there's going to be challenges ahead in the next year, and you might be able to get it for a better price, but you can dip in right now and then, you know, buy and cost average down if you need to, because over the next 5 to 10 years, as long as these plans are allowed to be put in place and we continue down the path we're seeing for Argentina, I think the huge upside.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Are they going to be buying up Model Ys?
They might be, actually. There's some deals going on there for Argentina. There is, I think the big thing for Elon and Tesla, Argentina is one of the largest suppliers of lithium.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So they're looking to make a deal.
Right.
That makes sense. It's a win-win for each one. Exactly. Argentina gets some electric vehicles and they provide some lithium.
Yep.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that works out. And plus, South America needs another strong economy outside of Brazil to really grow and establish that continent there and make it more of an economic place where people want to go versus people want to leave, which is the common misconception of a lot of South American countries, is everybody's trying to get out of there. But if you know, you have places like Brazil and other countries that are growing and becoming more self-sufficient and economically viable. I mean, with Argentina definitely added to the list.
Yep, I agree. I agree. Well, the reputation stems from the Cold War.
It does. I mean, a lot of World War II individuals fled to Argentina too after World War II.
Yeah. So Tesla sold 96,729 Model Ys in the United States in the first quarter of 2024. This is only up about 1.4% from last year, but still the Model Y accounted for 35% of all U.S. battery electric vehicle sales in the quarter. So if this new large or longer range vehicle for the Model Y can drive sales higher, it's going to be a big deal for Tesla.
So 35% of all U.S. electric vehicle sales were the Model Y.
Model Y, yep.
Man, so we're going to see a lot of Model Ys on the road here. So.
Yep. So if you're looking into Monday trading, Tesla stock is down about 27% this year. This underperforms S&P 500 by about 35 percentage points. However, shares are up about 28% from the 52-week closing low. And this was because of better than feared first earnings, improved investor sentiment.
I mean, wasn't it also because of the visits to China and the agreements with Xi and so forth?
Yeah, and possible, you know, and planned visits to India, and yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, Tesla got those they got the rights to go ahead and move forward with that their what is it, the software that allows it to become a driverless taxi cab. China approved it after the visit of Elon to China. So, I mean, you got some good news there. I mean, it's a software upgrade that Tesla's selling to any individual who owns one of Tesla cars that you could just upgrade the software and boom, you got a driverless taxi that you can rent out. I don't know if I would like that. Because now instead of driving Uber or a Lyft and you're in your car and you're in the car with someone else, now you just anybody can hop in. You're not in your car. You don't know what they're doing to your car. You know what I mean? You're the
Yeah.
one paying for that car.
Let me ask you this question real quick, because for somebody like me that initially bought in at $140 a share, would you, if you were underweight, because I do think there's a good case to make if you're underweight on a good stock and a good company, that you can cost average up, and that could be the right decision for Tesla. If you were me or somebody like me, would you buy again right now?
For you, yes.
Okay.
For you, yes. I would not go in matching what your original principal is. I'd be going in with less than what your original principal was, just so that you could keep that cost average low. But like, yes, it's always a if you're a long-term investor, go in again. And I've maintained the position of telling new investors and new people new to creating a stock account and new to investing in stocks and in those regards to. And with a lot of people who maybe aren't financially don't have a huge income, and they only have that 50 bucks a paycheck or 20 bucks a paycheck, just to go ahead and continue to buy in on good, solid companies that are going to continue growth. I have a long-term view on Tesla as more than just a car company. A lot of people argue with me about that. A lot of people, I mean, I've gotten to, some good arguments and discussions about whether or not Tesla is just a car company or whether there is future growth in other areas of evolved around Tesla. And I believe there is, and that's what I'm investing in. Now, the car company currently is providing profit for Tesla to use to grow those other areas. So, yeah, I mean, that's my view on it. So, given my view, that's my advice.
That's what I think too. And that's what I was telling a buddy of mine that was texting me, asking me about if he should cost average up. I said, yeah, you know what? It can be painful at times to look at that average cost go up when you buy. But over time, really, you're not going to notice that anymore. And you're just going to wind up making more money if you made a good investment choice.
Yeah, it's like I have someone who all she could do was afford 20 bucks paycheck, and she started buying Google at like 110 bucks, and now Google's at like 165, and she's been buying it over the course of over a year now, at just 20 bucks a paycheck, and just adding in, and people like that who are at that level of income, what they're thankful for is a year later they look at me and they always say, you know what? I never thought I would have this much money in a stock account ever.
Right. And that
And
fact
they're very,
happens quickly.
yeah, and they're amazed at that, and they're amazed of what percentage of growth they've had. And I'm like, look, so you see the value in it now, right? Because everybody asks, like, how did I get my capital for nothing? Because I always tell people that I got it from nothing, like I was broke and poor. And I was eating the cornflakes boxes that were just all white and said cornflakes. Not a joke. Really did eat them. They had them at Kroger for a while. They were a buck for a big box of cornflakes. And that's what I ate. And what I tell people is I had three jobs for a while. Three jobs. And my first job paid all my bills. My second two jobs, I just literally grabbed all that money and just was throwing it into a savings account, stock accounts. And I did that for a couple of years. And I created all my, I created capital. Now I had capital to trade with. And once you save up, because that saved up tens of thousands of dollars very quickly over 2 years, quickly for me. Now all of a sudden I'm making $2,000 to $3,000 every single month, just off of my stock accounts because I was able to trade. Now it's the, huh?
I knew you when you were going through that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're a witness to like,
Oh.
I was sleeping on my breaks. I was sleeping on my lunches. Like I just ate whatever I could get my hands on because I
Yeah.
just didn't have time for food or anything, but I had a vision. I had a dream and I knew what I was going to accomplish and I accomplished it. So when people say like I'm never going to be able to save up these monies that to listen to your guys' show or invest with them, like you can, it just takes a lot of sacrifice. It takes a lot of sacrifice. But by showing people just $20 paycheck, like the person I'm the example I'm giving, I don't name names for a reason, but the example I gave, she's excited now a year later to say, hey, look how much money I have saved up and the amount of money I've made off my investments. So yeah, so all this back to Tesla. Yeah, Tesla would be a good investment long term if you have a long term view of Tesla.
I agree. Let's move on to Berkshire.
Oh God, here we go.
Berkshire had its annual investor conference and meeting yesterday. Real sad point here. At one point during the meeting, Warren was talking, and then he looked over to Greg Abel, who's filling in, the role that Charlie Munger used to fill in. And he looked at Greg, and he accidentally called him Charlie, just a
Oh,
forced habit. And that was kind of sad.
very sad.
Yeah, but Berkshire Hathaway, what's not sad is their operating profits rose 39% after taxes, to a record $11.2 billion. And this was really boosted by property and casualty insurance businesses and higher investment income. They also reduced their massive stake in Apple in the first quarter by about 13%. But don't get too excited about this. They still have 790 million shares. And I think it was just more of a rebalancing deal because they had become so heavily overweight and reliant on that stock. And this is based on the information in the Berkshire 10Q report. The company bought back $2.6 billion in stock for the first quarter. This was up from $2.2 billion in the fourth quarter. Quarterly earnings reflected $2.6 billion underwriting profit at Berkshire's insurance businesses, up from $911 million a year earlier. Investment income rose to $2.6 billion from $2 billion in the year earlier period. This is actually really, really, really impressive considering the S&P 500's lackluster performance so far this year, in my opinion. Berkshire purchased the Apple stake that they had mostly between 2016 and 2018, paid an average price of $35 a share.
That's all they paid? Wow.
So it only took $35 a share, and of course on Friday, Apple's $183.38. So nice little boost there for.
Woo. Man, that's a nice return.
Geico had an underwriting profit of $1.9 billion, and this was against a profit of $703 million in the year earlier period. Geico is a bit of a concern right now for some investors because a lot of the wildfires that happened back in 2020 are starting to catch up with Geico. So they're looking at liabilities increasing this year, and they kind of gave us a warning about that.
Well, hold on. I did see an article on that, and they were writing off as like someone one of the executives at Geico was writing off saying he wasn't concerned.
Yeah, I don't think it's much of a concern either when you have what was it 100? I didn't even get the cash on here somehow. I totally missed the cash part. Was it 180 billion?
No, it was a oh, cash on hand.
Yeah.
Yes, Berkshire Hathaway's cash on hand is tremendous. We'll get to that in a minute, but like Geico made 1.2 billion in profit last
Yeah.
quarter, so I think
Yeah.
they're okay.
Some couch change going to go to the liabilities that are coming from wildfires, basically.
Yeah.
Overall.
Unfortunate they happen, but they're not concerned.
Yeah. Overall operating profits per Class A share up 40% to the first quarter of 2023. That easily topped estimates of $6,700 or $6.70 per share. Results exclude changes in the value of Berkshire's equity portfolio. Blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, look, if you're looking at, 38 to 40% growth in operating profits, like, this isn't a growth company, Dave. It's not supposed to be.
But it is now, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is a growth company. And the cash on hand, just so everyone knows, they have more cash on hand than Apple does. Berkshire Hathaway has $188 billion in cash on hand. They could go out there and they could buy a number of Fortune 500 companies with that kind of money.
Yeah. Speaking of Apple, revenue declining for the fifth time in the past 6 quarters.
And I wonder about this because Apple has so many other revenue streams besides phone sales, but phone sales are slipping and that's hurting them so bad. It tells me that their other revenue streams are not producing what they had hoped they would be producing, such as Apple TV, which the numbers are showing that it is very unsuccessful. And I wonder, like, you know, are they losing their ability to keep people? Hey, if you're going to listen to podcasts, you have to listen to Apple Podcasts. Or if you listen to music, you got to use Apple Music. And people are starting to find ways to use Spotify and other means. And so Apple's losing that tight control over the product.
You wouldn't know this, Dave, but as an iPhone owner, you can listen to the other podcast apps.
What? Apple is loosening their controls?
Well, this has been forever. I've been able to listen to Spotify for a long time.
Well,
very long
time. I'm just saying, so that's been hitting their numbers and their bottom lines, is their ability to keep Apple users using just Apple products and not moving out to other ones.
So I don't want to, you know, take a dump too badly on the provider that we're using right now, Anchor, which is a Spotify company. You know, here's the thing. Why aren't we advertising with Anchor anymore? It's because we don't have enough Spotify subscribers, despite the fact that we have a lot of people listening from the iPhone. Most of our people that are listening from Apple Podcasts, but we're being punished because they're not coming from Spotify. So Spotify is the one that's wanting everybody to, you know, use Spotify and listen to their stuff on Spotify and not Apple Podcasts. Just say it.
Yeah, I agree that is the case. Even though for our listeners, by the way, we had a 35% increase in listenership on Spotify last year alone. So thank you. But yeah. Okay. Point taken.
Okay. So, but you know what? I will say this, the services growth, 14.2%. I mean, that's okay, but I was expecting a little bit higher here. $110 billion buyback plan. Record. And for any company. And I wonder if this is kind of to soften the cushion right now of the ailing iPhone sales and to buy them time to get more into the artificial intelligence arena, which a lot of people are expecting them to announce a project in June.
I would rather they take $110 billion and they invest in research and development in some of these underperforming areas.
So would I. But they're still treating shareholders really well by doing that. And at the same
time, do a $10 billion buyback and put $100 million better in to make a better headset or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's true. And it did pump the share price, which does make it possible for me to say, 2 weeks ago, I told you to buy Apple.
And I own Apple. So
you're all fishing for a company to buy. And I said, why don't you just buy Apple? You could have, and it would have.
And my response was, I own Apple, and I don't even think it's back at my break. No, I'm not even breaking even still at the price I paid for it. So,
yeah. Well, the thing is, with Apple, I think we are going to get an artificial intelligence announcement. I don't want to buy too much into the AI hype like everybody else is, but if Apple's going to do it, we know from history what they're going to do is they're going to take something that somebody else already did and just kind of add to it. And then it'll be Apple's. That's probably what's going to happen here. iPhone 16 slated for a release this year. I really believe you're probably going to see something to do with artificial intelligence. I really want to see that services grow higher and higher and higher and keep going that way, because I think that's the way they're going to grow. Samsung just took back over the spot as being the number one cell phone sales in the world. So, you know, they kind of want to take the market share from there too, but really the growth is going to have to come from services for Apple from now on, I think.
Yeah, the iPhone sales is not going to, I mean, China's being very competitive, Huawei being very competitive, Samsung being very competitive, Google and the Pixel taking a lot as well. So,
yeah, I mean, it was just, you know what, this quarter and I think what it jumped about like 6-7% or somewhere Apple did. And I think it was just really, really low expectations for this quarter. And there were some beats and people got really happy about it and bought more as a result. And I think really that $110 billion of a share buyback program is wild,
It is
wild
wild.
high.
Yep. I agree. So far, we don't disagree. There's no bickering and bantering so far, Brandon.
You know
Come
what they
on.
did though, but then this kind of really surprised me. I don't think we've covered this on the show, but they completely scrapped the EV project they had.
Yeah, you know, we haven't covered that. And yes, they quietly scrapped it and they quit because I remember back in the day when the MVIS micro vision was a big, huge topic amongst our show and other shows at that time. MVIS and making a deal with Apple for their autonomous vehicle program, and it never came to fruition.
Yeah, hype.
Very much
That's
hype.
hype. Yeah.
I was very happy for the people who bought MVIS at like 20 cents a share and it went all the way up to $26 a share through that 1 year run. Very happy for them. They made a huge return on their money, but you know.
Yeah. That's all I
Yeah.
got.
That's all you got. Cool. All right, so before we transition, I'm going to go into my stock twits of the week, some stock twits I found this week. So one stock that I've covered on the show and I've recently sold and I've recently bought back in was Cooler, KULR, Cooler. And on stock twits, someone wrote, and I found this funny, you may not. It said, bearish is an immature word to use for this stock.
For what stock
Nice.
was that?
Cooler Technology Group. On the Tesla stock twits. Sorry, I'm trying to read this and I'm already laughing. This gentleman on Tesla's or person on Tesla stock twit said, Tupac told me Warren Buffett likes the stock. And then on the Bitcoin stock twits. You ready for this one? I love these crypto guys. I always come up with some funny stuff. Bitcoin. I think I'm going to have a day drinking game today. Every time someone mentions a cup and handle, I drink. That's the one I actually laughed out loud when I read it. Because if you go on stock twits, I mean, sometimes you get some good advice, sometimes you get really horrible advice, but a lot of times you get chart guys or chart people on there quoting this chart, cup and handle, iron condor, head and shoulders, yada, yada, yada. It's just hilarious. It's hilarious. You get a lot of that. So you got to weed through it and get the information you're looking for. But stock twits. Yep, that's what I got. Did you have any stock twits, Brandon?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry. I was listening to you at the same time looking at pictures of this badass Javier Milei guy.
So Brandon, of course, was
All
not
right.
paying attention.
I was
That's
listening. I was listening.
typical Brandon for this show.
Listening.
And you know, this is what happens when you do things like this, people. This is all I'm saying.
I mean, you
All
can't see
right.
this. This is a podcast, right? This is an audio show, so listeners can't see what I'm showing, but. Your reaction to what you just saw. This guy looks awesome.
Yeah, he looks pretty cool.
Looks like an 80s commando.
Yes, an 80s commando.
Dirty Harry. He's got a Dirty Harry vibe going on.
He does in the picture you shared, he does. I'll give you that. I do want to get to this couple a few articles here and have and some information I want to cover real quick if we can. So, first thing I want to talk about was that the US job number that came in this past week.
Yeah.
So, previous week inflation had gone up, right? And we were looking at some bad GDP had gone down. So GDP was dropping, inflation was going up, and we're concerned that we're going to have to do some rate hikes. So, and jobs numbers come out. So, what we're looking for is like, was the economy coming in hot? Because if the economy is coming in hot at the same time these other things are happening, the feds might have to raise rates even more and not even talk about cutting. So, the job numbers actually came in below the estimate. The estimate was for 240,000 jobs created. It came in at 175. So that was a good amount below. And the unemployment rate ticked higher by 0.1% to 3.9%. So those two things meant that the Fed will not have to raise rates. But they're still concerned about the GDP dropping and inflation's going up. So we're, you know, how is inflation going up when you know, we're starting to cool off, the economy's starting to cool off. It takes time for all these things to take full effect, and so to really see the effect of all the rate hikes and everything going into it.
Yeah, it does. It does. But I mean, the initial news here, the stock market on the jobs number on Friday, the stock market ripped a little bit higher. But I didn't take it as good news. I want to see inflation going down with the job numbers being regulated.
Right, so you kind of want to see the reverse effect of what we're seeing.
Yeah, because
You want to see, yeah.
otherwise we're losing our jobs for no good reason.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what we're looking at here. So that means that we might be, again, I use data to tell me what's going to happen. This tells me that yes, we might be moving more into that period of time where we might have a recession. Again.
Stagflation.
Yeah, so this is the second week in a row you've heard me come on here and have bearish news and bearish topics, and this is more data that's pointing towards that case is what I'm talking about. I don't historical trends are nice. Historical trends are typically correct, but they always have an error rate, and that's why I don't usually like going with them. I like the data to tell me. The data right now is what I'm showing 2 weeks in a row
Oh.
has shown me a more of a bearish stance.
History never repeats itself. People think it does, but it does. There's always different X factors, right?
Yeah.
Look at the historical trends because that's what we have to go off of. I do it all the time.
Yeah.
But you have to recognize that, you know, gotta hate this. I hate this phrase, but this time is a little bit different than it was last time.
Yeah.
It's always a little bit different, you know. We have the same results over and over again, but sometimes it's a little different.
Exactly. But so having said that, so I preface my next part with that article on the jobs numbers and the data. I go into my next part, which is all I have a lot of information here. We may not cover it all. We may just cover a little bit on commercial real estate investment and the commercial real estate market at this time. So, Brandon, I've mentioned this before on the show, and last year I was thinking like maybe you buy a REIT, you know, that's a real estate investment trust at this time as it goes down and it goes up. Well, it never went down. We never saw the actual collapse of the commercial real estate market. And we're still not seeing it, but I'm still seeing article after article showing all this data and all these historical trends about how the commercial real estate market should be falling. So let me go on to some of these numbers and some of these articles. The biggest person out there talking about commercial real estate is Kevin O'Leary. We all know him for Shark Tank. He's some people call him a talking head, but he's been out there and he's talking about this. You know, there's cities like Boston, right? Boston has a lot of vacancies. Up to 40% of all the commercial real estate market in Boston is vacant as of March of this year. So that's a huge amount of number, right? A lot of the regional banks have 40% of portfolio in commercial real estate. So one thing that Kevin O'Leary said back in March is that you're going to see some regional banks fail because of the commercial real estate investment. If you have 40% of your portfolio invested in commercial real estate and the commercial real estate is pretty empty, you might fail, right?
Right.
That's something that might happen. We did see a regional bank fail because of being insolvent here, but we'll get into that in a little bit. But the commercial real estate market is a big one coming. So what happened here? You have to go back, and I hate going back to the pandemic. I do because I want to move past that in history, right? But unfortunately, we have to go back to it last time, right? Once more into the breach, dear friends. So go back to pandemic. Everybody started working from home. We all thought that this was going to be the new way of doing things, and the commercial real estate market had a huge hit to it. People weren't paying leases because they didn't need it because everybody's working remotely. Now you could say some people have gone back to work. Yes, the big companies have brought their people back into the facilities and the offices and everything else. However, these small businesses have found it more cost effective to go ahead and keep working from home. So the small businesses are the ones that take up a lot of this commercial real estate market, and the regional banks are invested in this commercial real estate market. These are causing issues because now the people who own this have to go ahead and refinance. And if they're refinancing now, they might even be refinancing as high as 9% on their loans just because of the type of loans they have. That's not a good sign. And that means that these people who own these real estate investments aren't going to do well. And then the banks who own the loan on the real estate investment companies aren't going to do well. It's a ripple effect that happens once people are no longer working in offices, but rather they're able to remotely work more and more and more. So one example is NYMT. This is one company, the New York Mortgage Trust. It's a REIT. At the beginning of this year, around January, it was close to $9 a share, $9.52 even at one point. As it is currently, it's at $6.20 a share. That's over a 30% drop just this year alone. And it's that one is a focus on mortgages and commercial real estate in the New York area. So that one's definitely going to help. New York Community Bank shares, they plunged over 40% this year alone. That's another New York bank dealing in real estate investment that is really, really hurting. It's not just set in New York alone, but it's in other areas as well. So let me go in here and give you some stats. According to Goldman Sachs, some $1.2 trillion of commercial real estate mortgages are scheduled to mature this year and next. That's almost a quarter of all outstanding commercial mortgages, the highest recorded level going back to when? 2008. The biggest single holder are banks with a 40% share. Other estimates put the maturity wall size $1.5 trillion. Whatever the number it is, lots of borrowers are going to have to refinance mortgages at 2 or even 3 times higher rates than what they did to the 500 basis points of Fed rate hikes over 2022 to 2023. They're not going to be able to do that, so that's going to put lenders on the hook, right? Apollo's chief economist, Torsten Storck, estimates that also almost 70% of commercial real estate loans are held by small and regional banks. So Barry Sternlicht, CEO of Starwood Capital Group, an investment firm focusing on real estate, they have about $115 billion of assets under management. They talk even gloomier. Steinreich told Global he talked at the Global Alts Conference, and he said the office market has an existential crisis right now. It's a $3 trillion asset class that is probably worth only $1.8 trillion. There's a $1.2 trillion of losses spread somewhere, and nobody knows exactly where it all is. First initial thoughts, Brandon.
Not good. I mean, the prices are remaining high, and you don't want to pay this right now. You don't want to have to refinance with those interest rates being as high as they are. You don't want to have to pay these sky high lease costs when you can send your employees home, have them work from home, and there's new ways of holding them accountable and making sure that they're staying on top of things when they're at home now. There's no reason to do it. I think that if lease costs and interest rates were reasonable for companies, they'd want the employees in the office because it's easier to hold people accountable when they're in the office and they're in your line of sight. But, you can tell now when somebody's gone inactive. You can tell if somebody's typing, if somebody sent an email, or how many emails they've sent for the day, how many different things they've done for the day, what reports they ran. All of that stuff is now accessible to you. And all of your KPIs, key performance indicators, are now virtual. They're in the cloud. So why would you want to pay those sky high lease costs and have the employees in the office when they can just do everything that they were going to do from home now?
And that's a point as to why there's fewer people, fewer companies, and especially the small, medium sized businesses working from home more. But my concern, Brandon, is the last time I heard members of investment firms and corporate banks and everybody else saying, hey, We see like a $1.2 trillion worth of losses, and we don't know who holds these notes, and we don't know where the bottom really is on this. The last time I heard those kind of talk was, the crisis of 2007, 2008, when they said, we don't know where the bottom is. Hey, we don't know who actually holds all these mortgages. It's all too mixed up and bag. And that's my concern. Now, when I look at the number 1.2 trillion, possibility, according to some people, 1.5 trillion, is that enough to cause a major recession like we had in 2008? It shouldn't be.
You don't think so?
And not the same amount, because the banks are meant to hold more collateral and cash on hand now than they were then.
Yeah.
So not to the same effect. Would it cause a really harsh recession that would trickle worldwide? Yeah. But I don't think it's going to be as deep or as hard at all.
I would think it would be more isolated than the housing
Yes.
market. The housing
Yep.
market has ripple effects across everybody because it hits the consumer directly.
Yeah, and this is more consolidated around banks and regional banks. And that's where my concern is. So when we look at the banks and the regional banks and who's holding what and who's got what, the bank that failed just this year because of due not due directly to this, but partially due directly to this, was First Republic Bank. That's one that failed this year.
Yeah. Don't put all your
And
eggs in one basket and don't name yourself Republic.
I mean, yes. So last year, the Fed had a response to the regional bank shock that went through, and everybody thought all these regional banks were just going to disappear, and only a few became insolvent last year from the Signature Valley Bank fiasco, if you want to call it that way. Was the liquidity injection via the Bank Term Funding Program. So that came out last year, and it's something the feds were doing, but it wasn't enough to stop First Republic Bank from going under, right?
Yeah.
So Brian Graham,
Inflation too,
co-founder.
by the way. It adds to
Yeah.
inflation too, by the way. Two-edged sword there.
Right. So Brian Graham, co-founder and partner of Claros Group, told CNBC that most of these banks are not insolvent. They're not even close to insolvent. They're just stressed. That means there'll be fewer bank failures, kind of like what we just said just now. Like, it's they're able to hold on to their banks. They're not going to see 2008 again. But, it could cause a recession that could have a ripple effect amongst the banking sector, right? That's what you and I were just talking about. But what he goes on to say is it doesn't mean that communities and customers don't get hurt by that stress. So that's where his concern is. Directly, is it no consequence if they're below insured deposit limits, which are quite high right now at 250,000? If a failing bank is insured by the FDIC, all depositors will be paid up to at least 250,000 per depositor per ownership category. My issue is, why is the former chair of FDIC, Sheila Blair, going on TV trying to reassure people that they're going to get their money when we're talking about these regional and commercial banks this week? I mean,
Yeah.
I wonder if they know something's going to happen and they're trying to get ahead of it.
Well, there were bank runs last year that crashed a couple of those banks. A couple of those banks went under because of bank runs, and I think she's trying to prevent that from happening again.
Right. And I get that. I get that.
Bam.
So here's my question then. So we've recognized some of these banks like NYNT and other regional real estate banks, right? They're down 30, 40%, some of them 50 more percent, right? At this point in time, we have Sheila Blair trying to get on there saying, hey, don't worry, we're going to be okay. The FDIC insurance is going to come in and cover you, yada, yada, yada. Do you buy these based off the lows now, hoping that they make it through this and then they jump back up next year?
No. Too uncertain.
Gotcha.
How many times do we hear people say, no, the banks are fine before 2007? And
Oh, well, all the time, right?
How
Like,
many people on your favorite program on CNBC called the banks a buy and said, go buy Bear Stearns, buy.
Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, yes. Yeah, I mean, yeah, and I tell you what, during that time, I was stock trading during that time. You were starting to get into it during that time. Bear Stearns at $2. I mean, why when it was being sold for $2 a share was just a shame. But you know, we all, I mean, yeah. It's crazy time. And traders nowadays who are in their mid to early 20s will never, I hope they never have to understand what that was like to see some firms of over 100 years around just disappear in less than a year.
You mentioned me getting into it back then, and I just think to myself, like, oh my gosh, why did I not just hold some of the stocks I bought? Like, first time I ever bought Apple. How is that not still in my portfolio from back then? I mean,
Right.
I look at even some of the stuff I called back 4 years ago, and I think, man, John, on this show, China, that was terrible, terrible idea. I mean, I've made some really, really good
A
calls,
bull
and
in the China shop.
they've overshadowed all of the things that I've done that were negative. But, this is one of the things about the stock market and economics. You learn something new every day, and you keep learning and you keep getting better at
Right. So my takeaway from this commercial real estate is
Okay,
this.
back to the subject.
Yeah, back to the subject. My takeaway from the commercial real estate is this. I would be wary of investing in any REITs as of this time. I wouldn't invest in them personally. And like Brandon, it's too uncertain for these regional banks. So do some due diligence if you're going to invest in a regional or community bank at this moment in time. How heavily are they invested in commercial real estate? Because that's the domino that's going to cause that bank to be stressed, as one person said on TV, or as another said it, possibly be insolvent. So,
There
you know.
was a time, I remember when I was a kid, it was, invest in the banks, and if you're looking for capital preservation, it was the time. Invest in the banks, get your certificates of deposits as well. Buy stocks in JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, PNC, and just let it sit. And now I think that there's the confidence just isn't there for that anymore.
Well, it's not. Times have changed. Times change, and banks are people are eating away at the way banks money. Like with Robinhood giving you 5% yield on your savings account. Well, that was money that banks just kept. So that's eating away at their profits. But it also goes to show you, like, so I started trading in the early 2000s, and well, being interested in trading and trading somewhat, and a gentleman by 2010. He came up to me and he was talking about how, yeah, you my brothers made tons of money off of just investing in P&G over the years and continuing to invest, and it splits and everything. And I had only been, watching the stock market for close to, what, 8 years at that point. I'm like, P&G, I'm like, that's a horrible investment, because from 2000 to 2010 it was flat. It didn't move one little bit. Like you probably lost a little bit of money on it. And he looked at me like I was crazy. And the difference was that he had 40 years of experience with P&G, and I was looking at just the last 8, 9 years, and I'm like, that's a horrible investment. He's like, it's a great investment.
The blink of an eye, and he was probably buying on the dips, and so it looked flat on the chart, but his portfolio, he was probably up.
Yeah, he had been investing for over 30 years. This is an older gentleman at the time. He'd been investing for over 30 years in P&G. And so for him, it was great.
And he's
He
making
has,
the dividends too.
yeah, he's making the dividends as well. But for me, I was just like, that's nutty. And so there's a difference of views and outlook, but it's always good to talk with other people who have those different views to understand it and learn. But yeah, commercial banks, a regional bank, sorry, I'm staying away from them for right now. I just want to get that news out there for other people to understand how that market's going to affect. Yes, I don't believe it's going to cause a 2008 recession. But I believe, like the one person said, it's going to stress a lot of the banks and some of these ones that are solely focused on real estate, like NYMT, could become insolvent. Could is the big word. Brandon, final thoughts.
Man, you always hit me with this, and I'm never prepared. How am I never prepared? 157 shows, 157 final thoughts, and I'm always caught off guard by this question. You know what? I said buy Apple before. I still think Apple is good to have in your portfolio. I wouldn't call right now to sell it. I'm concerned about declining iPhone sales. I am concerned about competition from Huawei and China. But you know, I think the services are doing well. The $110 billion buyback program, I would prefer to see them put that into new investments that would, you know, help the company grow in other areas such as services, artificial intelligence, and so on. But it is evidence that they treat their shareholders really, really well. They've always been super honest with the shareholders. I think it's a company that you need in your portfolio. I'm not saying necessarily to buy it right now, but you get the dips on it and stuff like that. You get a 10% pullback for whatever reason. You can start adding into it and be comfortable over the long term.
Nice. I'm a little cautious right now. Sometimes I have calls for you guys. Sometimes I have puts. I don't have anything. I'm too cautious right now. I'm too cautious. I see a mixed bag ahead. And since it's mixed, I'm not saying I'm a bear right now. I'm not a bull. I'm right in the middle here, and I don't know which way to go.
Okay.
So I'm just holding my investments right now, and I'm kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. I usually make money in June. June's usually a hot month for me. For some reason, I just find the right stuff to buy at the end of May and June and July. It just does great for me every year. But right now, I don't have any good thing to buy. Besides the positions I'm already holding, and I have a small amount of cash on hand, so I'm ready to buy something, but I don't quite know what yet.
Let me give you something to watch. I think it's had too much of a run right now, but if you can get a good pullback on recession fears, let me ask you a question. Who would you think of if I asked you who was the top provider of artificial intelligence programs to the United States government?
Ooh, to the United States government, Microsoft.
Booz Allen Hamilton. Isn't that
Really?
crazy? Yeah. It's a little too expensive right now for my taste, but I think it belongs on your watch list
What's the
on a pullback.
ticker?
BAH.
All right. Adding it to one of my watch lists because I got a few of them. Nice. All right, cool. There you go. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you want us to come do a live show near you or around you or with you, let us know. Reach out, Brandon and I. We have banners, we have signs. We will shave and get dressed up and show up. No, we won't. We will roll out of bed
I will
and be
not
there.
shave. I
Brandon
will.
will be late probably and be there.
I'll wear a
There
hat. You're welcome.
you go. But as always, we hope we have been entertaining, educational, and uplifting. Because we want everyone to make money. Have a good night.
Have a good night.